Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Hi, and welcome back to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I am so happy that you're here to listen to this conversation today, because this is a conversation I've been dying to have since the minute I uttered the words or the phrase to myself, I think I can do a podcast. And today's guest is, I'll tell you who she is because I can't hold back. I'm terrible at keeping these kinds of secrets. I'm great at keeping other secrets, but it's my friend, my compadre, one of my soul sisters, Nancy Halla, who is not only all of that that I've just told you, but she is also a brand coach. She is a strategist. She is a strategist extraordinaire and a storyteller. She is an entrepreneur. She is a former podcaster. She is newly married, you guys. I mean, like 5 minutes ago, as in like September 2020, 5 minutes ago. And just an awesome lover, a lover of life, a mom. And she's so relatable to so many of us. And I'm delighted, honored, and humbled to have her here to have this chat with you, to tell us where she was, who she is, and who she is today. So Nancy, thank you for joining me. I'm so excited you're here.
Bella, I'm so happy for you. I love this podcast already. I love it for you. You know, I love everything about you and Smart Dating Academy for good reason. You have transformed my life. But thanks for that great introduction. It's great to be here.
I am so glad you're here. And you are in Washington State right now. Is that right? In your beautiful, magical home?
I call it the treehouse because I live in the middle, almost at the edge of a forest, a pine forest. I live in a place that I could never have imagined for myself, even 2 years ago. But that's where true love has taken me. So I live in a small town north of Seattle, and it's very, very pretty. Mountains and lakes and oceans and trees.
Oh,
and I need to correct you one thing. You said I got married a minute ago, September 2020. No, it was September 2021.
Oh my God, September 2021.
18th, you were at the wedding, my friend. September 18th, we got married in Cleveland, Ohio.
And
indeed,
not only did I get the year wrong, yes, it really was 5 minutes ago in September 18th of 2021. And Andy and I were so delighted to get the invitation in the mail. And we were like, yes, 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 we are coming. And as Nancy and I were getting ready to record, I said to Nancy, I think it is the most fun wedding that I have ever been to. It was filled with love and magic, but I'm going to wait for us to get there chronologically for you so you can hear exactly where Nancy was. But let me tell you, and Nance, jump in, because I'm going to tell the story. I'm going to set the stage as to how we met, how we worked together, and what happened. So probably, I want to say it was 2018, maybe, where somehow Nancy's best friend and podcasting partner, Sherry Salata, and I were connected through a common friend, and we got on the phone together, just connecting as two people do, like, oh, tell me you, what do you do? Oh, great, great, great. And so when Sherry was listening, she's like, wow, Smart Dating Academy, you teach people how to find love, personal trainers, that's amazing. And, you know, both my business partner, Nancy, and I are both single. I'm not really ready for the things that you do, but Nancy is super adventurous, and I think she would dive right into this. So how about let's test the waters, Bella. Come on the podcast. Let's do your very first meeting with Nancy live on the podcast. You do your thing, and then we'll figure out where it goes from there. So Nance, you and I met for the first time on podcast episode one, not knowing where this journey was going to take us.
I know Sherry loved to do that. She loved to spring guests on me, and where I was, my story was the focal point. It was so adorable and fun. And I actually really liked it. I love that because I am adventurous, and I was in a place in my life where I had been single for a long time. Right. So I got divorced when my kids were 4 and 7, which is about, 26 years ago. Wow. So at the time that you and I met, Bella, I had been single for many, many years. And of course, like dating here and there, but not ever with like a game plan in mind. You know, I thought like, oh, true love, or maybe one day I'll meet Keanu Reeves. That's my fantasy. Now that I live in LA, I'll marry Keanu, because at the time I was living in LA. So I had very sort of pie in the sky, and I wasn't really thinking about it in terms of a game plan. And then you and I met on the podcast, and the minute we started talking, I am like, who is this woman? And what the heck is Smart Dating Academy? And she hails from my hometown of Chicago. Woo-hoo! Like everything about you, I was like, yes, like law of attraction. Yes. And I remember we worked it out where I was going to be the test subject. I went to Chicago to have the Smart Dating Academy experience, the whole kit and caboodle. So I had the intake session. We had that wonderful brunch. We talked for several hours.
At the Four Seasons, Four Seasons.
Yes. And it was very amazing. It was like this wonderful revealing conversation. It felt like therapy. And then the photo shoot, which was incredible and so important, really. And that's something that I was like, oh, the photo shoot, whatever. So I'll get some good pictures, maybe. But the photo shoot was like key to success.
Oh my gosh. And just
change your life.
Change your life. And you know what's funny is, pre-COVID, we used to meet everybody in person. We had space at the Four Seasons. And so what Nancy did is we sent her, like we would for all of our, boutique coaching clients, we sent her this dossier of paperwork to fill out these questionnaires, which made her detail, what was it like growing up? What were you like? What were your parents like? What were they like with you? Tell us all about your significant relationships, your marriage. What attracted you to this person? What ultimately broke you up? What was his responsibility? What was yours? And going through this constellation of data points together, then really what I call embarking on this new contract for what we call your high GHQ guy, high and good husband qualities. And so, we took Nancy through, we took you through this exercise of the people in your life that make you happiest, right? Your elevator people, and really focused on the qualities that elevate you in relationships and clarified that. And then what are the red flags in dating, right?
Oh my God, those red flags. You know what? Honestly, what I would say about it is it was a profound shift in consciousness for me. And, anybody who's embarking on any kind of self-help in any area knows that shifting your consciousness is part of the puzzle, right? So expanding your awareness, being present with who you are, your needs, your wants, your desires, your hangups, your triggers, all that stuff, and really being clear about the person you are and what you really want. And so I've had a million conversations in my life with girlfriends about guys. Are you kidding me? It's like the number one thing that we all talked about for many years. Especially when we were younger. But I never had a conversation like the one that we had at the Four Seasons because it was strategic. There was, like I said before, a game plan. There was an outcome, an end game in mind. I wanted to find true love. And honestly, I will tell you that just saying that, making that declaration with you was super elevating, as you say, super liberating. You don't have to hide behind it. You don't have to act like, oh, well, whatever, maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's not for me. I just heard somebody say this. I was in a masterclass a couple of days ago, and one of the women said, I'd like to find somebody, but whatever. So probably not going to happen, and just shrugged it off like it was nothing. And I remember that I used to do that. I saw her doing it. I thought, wow, I used to do the same thing. And it's a defense mechanism.
Right.
Because you're worried that you're not going to find it. So you act like it's no big deal. And listen, for some people, maybe it's not, but I would imagine that all the people tuning into this podcast have like an interest in this. And I think it's amazing to be with somebody that you really, truly love, who loves you back. And I think it's an incredible life experience. And I'm super glad, super glad doesn't really cover it. I am enormously grateful, profoundly grateful that it has happened for me. But it was there in that conversation. And it was, yes, identifying the qualities, the good husband qualities, identifying the things I really want beyond funny,
tall,
because I'm 6 feet tall, gotta be tall, this, that, all those sort of superficial things. And really digging deep into, my first husband was those things that didn't work out. Let's talk about why. And so I started really, my consciousness was waking up, but then those red flags, I'm going to tell you, after meeting you, I would go on dates, and you and I talked about the dates, and I would think about the red flags. This one time I took a little notebook with me and I put it in my purse. And when I excused myself to the ladies' room, I would write down little notes because I didn't want to forget, because I knew that I was going to have a follow-up with you. And, red flags are things that in the past, what I realized, I used to completely brush them aside. I'd be like, yeah, oh, he's only talking about himself. He's not asking me any questions, but gosh, whatever, maybe he's nervous, that's okay. Maybe, and you just kind of do that defensive sort of playbook where you're trying to make room for this guy in your life, even though you've only known him for 14 minutes and he's, really, he's covered in red flags, but you're like, oh, well, I can fix that. I can work on that. So I stopped doing that. I really did. I stopped ignoring the things that really bugged me. And I started looking for things that I told you I wanted in those conversations. Like I told you, I wanted somebody who was really interested in me and listened and asked questions and gave of himself, real information, not superficial stuff, like a good talk, the kind of talk I have with people that are important to me. And I started noticing when that wasn't happening and then noticing when it did. So I think that you need to be armed with that information to date with a goal in mind. You can't just go out there and be like, oh, well, whatever will be, because that's what I did for 20 years.
100%. And I think that what so many of us do, it's kind of the same thing over and over again. When you're not armed with a new plan, a new strategy, it's like you think, oh, I know what a narcissist is. I've read about some red flags and I'm ready to date. And then you go out there. And yet what we end up doing as human beings is we end up doing what's comfortable for us versus what's actually right. So we find ourselves like, oh, I know that's right, but I'm going to keep doing this instead because it's comfy. It's kind of like, if I want to lose 20 pounds, I know I shouldn't shove the chocolate cake in my mouth, but at a certain point I just do because it makes me feel good, right? It's comfort. And so we date kind of like we eat the chocolate cake sometimes. Like it makes us, it's like an instant hit. And sometimes when people come in and they remind us of exes, and Nance, I don't know, I think you've probably, like most people, had these experiences where someone comes in and it's fast and it's furious and they say all of the things and it's intoxicating. And suddenly you feel like, oh my God, this is it. And then 3 or 4 months later, you're like, oh my God, this is not it. And the red flags start to reveal themselves and you're like, oh crap, maybe I jumped into that too fast. And maybe I swept those things under the rug. But I'm sure that this resonates with you, dear listener, as well as you, Nancy, as well as with me, because I had my own dating patterns as well.
Yeah. I mean, you're right when you say the mind seeks out the familiar. Right. That's why it's so hard to change a habit. Like if you're a person who gets out of bed every day at 8 and you really want to be the kind of person that gets up at 6 and gets a workout in, it's not so much that you're physically unable to do it or that you really don't have no willpower. It's that your mind seeks out familiar patterns. So that's why changing habits is hard. It is. And you have to really set yourself up for success, or else you'll make a million New Year's resolutions, for example, and then they all fall to the wayside because none of that stuff is familiar. You fall into old patterns. And the thing about dating other people is that, once I see somebody, if I'm sitting next to somebody who seems familiar to me, laughs a lot, talks a lot, bombastic personality, it's like, oh my God, we should get married, within an hour, which has happened to me. But all that really is narcissism, you know, and I learned that is that, what I'm looking for is I don't believe, you know, in order for me to feel validated by love, it's got to be a big, huge tidal wave coming at me. And for that person who's the tidal wave, that's a narcissist in action, right? Because they need to be central to you immediately. So I didn't know any of that stuff. I mean, like, listen, who told me that when I was 18? Nobody tells you a damn thing when you're starting to date. And it's a rocky sort of landscape to try to navigate. So right before I met the man, after I met you and we started doing some of the dating, I started doing, you know, dating in LA, which is not that easy for a woman in her 50s. But I did go on a couple of dates and nothing stuck. And then I moved to Seattle. And right when I moved to Seattle, I went home to Cleveland to see my family. That's where I'm from. And I ran into an old flame from high school.
Oh my God.
And this was like the light bulb, like the thunder clouds. It was like, oh my God, this is my love story. This is my love story. How poetic. I'm going to write a novel on this. Here's the guy who I loved since I was in fourth grade. And I loved him all through high school. He never looked at me twice. He dated all my friends. He was like the big man on campus, the football player, the popular guy, hilarious. And I never really existed for him. Right. And so here we are. I mean, I was 56, we're same age, in our 50s. We meet up in our old hometown, purely happenstance, and sparks a big romance. And, you know, he was all those things. He was the same things that attracted me about my first husband. It's like that, you know, larger than life, almost personality. And it fizzled out within, you know, 3 months because it was completely unsustainable. And there were red flags. I mean, literally there were red flags popping up all over the place that I was batting away. I was like, ignore, 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 ignore. But then every once in a while, I would get my Smart Dating Academy handbook out, you know, that folder that you give us. And I would read my good husband qualities. I would read my red flag list. And I'm like, oh, brother, I think I'm in deep water here. So I realized, you know, I got to start edging out of this relationship. And so I did. I put the pause button on it. And I was sitting on my couch one day. I put my toe back out into the dating water, right? Went on Hinge, which is a dating app that I love. And went on Match and went on a couple others. And I started, you know, okay, slowly going on a couple more dates in Seattle. And one day I had a date. It was a Saturday. I had a date scheduled with a man for 6 o'clock, drinks right down my street where I lived. And I get a text message from the old flame out of the blue. And it's like, hey, just checking in. How are you? And I thought, oh, you know what? I'm going to respond because I'm going to be a kind, good hearted. Oh, hi, I'm fine. How are you? And then I get this long text message back about almost as long as my arm. So he had a teed up waiting because I know how slow he types. And it's all about how amazing he's doing and who he's dating now and how he's also hanging out with all my old girlfriends from high school. And life couldn't be better. And, you know, and so in other words, designed to hurt me, which it did. And I felt like someone punched me in the stomach. So I sat down on the couch and I had this moment, Bella, that it's like this was to me the big turning point. I said to myself, if you want a different love story, you have to look for a different kind of man. And that day, 1 hour from that moment, I had this date down the street and I did not want to go because I was not happy. But I'm like, no, you're going. You're going to do the Bella Gandhi. You're going to go into the bathroom. You're going to put your berry lip on. You're going to fluff your hair out. You're going to put your dating uniform. I had a thing that I wore for every single first date. It was like,
of course,
it works. It's black. It's this, it's that, you know, that's my dating uniform. Threw it on. And I went down the street and there sitting there was David Bruce, the man who is now my husband, my beloved. And he is everything that those other guys are not. And I mean that really, like, you know, lovely, quiet, introspective, attentive, loving, kind, giving, you know, interested, funny, but like in a quiet, funny way. And, you know, it was to me that is the indication of a completely changed consciousness and then an immediate manifestation. Like it can't get faster than that. It was 60 minutes that I found him. And one date led to another. And here's the thing too. There was never a moment when I was left wondering, oh my God, is he going to go? call me? Is he going to, did he have fun? I don't know. You know, is he going to, because literally, you know, that was great. I'd love to see you again. So that was a Saturday night. Monday, he came down again. And this is a 2-hour drive from Bellingham, where he lived, down to Seattle. You know, oysters on Monday, again, right down the street from me. And then a date that, you know, 2 days later, and then he's going out of town, but right when he comes back, and can we go to this thing, and can we go whale watching? And so there was never a moment where I felt overwhelmed, because it was nicely paced and super mellow.
No love bombing, no love bombing.
Not at all, but just steady, slow and steady. Slow and steady wins the race, my dad used to say. And just a slow and steady, like always the interest, always the attentiveness. No love bombing, no weirdness, no sex, because of your instruction, Bella Gandhi.
Remember, say that again in case you were driving and you didn't hear that.
No sex. And that's a key, because also I think that what sometimes we miss as women is that guys aren't always ready for that either right away. You know, it's not like every man is so voraciously sexual at every moment of the day. Like, and I think that for some guys, that can be overwhelming too.
Yes.
It can be scary. Intimacy can be a lot, you know, it is a lot, and it has to be timed correctly. So I remember you gave me this image, maybe it was Sherry when we were talking, because we talked about you endlessly back in the day when we first met you, of like, you're like Doris, I'm like Doris Day with my little kitten heels and my lipstick and my purse. And I give them a nice little good night at the door. And I go into my apartment, like it's
done,
you know, I'm not jumping into bed with anybody. And that's why one of the strategies to see a couple people at the same time and sleep with no one and wait until you're in a monogamous committed relationship. So I took that very literally. And I actually said to David, I don't want us to make love until we're in love. So for me, that was a huge leap of faith to be able to be brave enough to say those words. Because, you know, and my inner critic was like, oh my God, what if he's thinking, I'm never falling in love with you? You know, what are you talking about, girl? But I said it anyway, because I was like, I'm going to say my truth. And this man is worth it. And this relationship is worth it. So, I mean, all those little moments, Bella, were really fueled by the confidence and clarity I gained working with you and shifting that consciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't a free for all. Okay. This is my life. My love life is my life. It's part of a big part of my life. This isn't a game. You know, this isn't a, oh, well, whatever will be. No, I don't approach any part of my life that way. I don't approach my business that way. I didn't approach raising my children that way. I don't approach my life as if it's a catch all, whatever happens. I have goals and I have maps to get those goals, right? I have a purpose. And so I really woke up to that. And I was like, you know what? My love life is important. I want to find true love. I want to get married to somebody I deeply love, who deeply loves me. I want to grow old with this person. That's what I want. And, you know, honestly, it's the clarity that illuminated the path for me. And here I am.
And here you are,
married.
Yay. And to such a lovely guy. And here's, as you were talking, it brought me back to so many great moments from the podcast and our work together. The majority of it was remote. And but there was this one time where we wanted to record a couple of different episodes. And I flew to LA and we met at Sherry's house and we were recording in her back recording room behind her kitchen. And I remember the three of us were all mic'd up and we were having this conversation. And I don't know if you remember this moment, but because it's come true for you, is I remember saying, the kind of man that I imagine you with, Nance, is he's going to be this guy. You're going to be up on stage and you're going to be wearing sequins and you're going to have a mic in your hands and you're going to be talking about something. And because this is your event and you look gorgeous, and the man that you're with is going to be in a tuxedo in the back of the room and he's going to elbow the guy next to him and say, look who I got. Can you believe that? And it was this moment. And I think we were all teary at that moment and like voices quivering. And I remember being at your wedding and looking at that guy wearing a tuxedo up in the front, talking about you into the microphone and how he was the luckiest guy in the world. I'm like, shit, this came full circle. Here he is. And she's up there. It may not be sequins, but it's in this gorgeous white wedding dress. And it was just, it was this full circle moment. Like, you deserved that guy. We could see that that was the guy that you were going to be with. And here he is, September 18th of 2021, saying, this is the best moment of my life, the best decision of my life, the best woman of my life. Like, it was just amazing. And I couldn't be happier for you and to have witnessed that truly after we manifested that on the podcast.
We did. We manifested it together, girl. I'm telling you. I mean, and he is like that. He is like this tireless supporter, this true believer in me, in our love, in our future. I mean, it's a beautifully secure, lovely feeling. And, you know, I honestly, I wouldn't have got there on my own. I wasn't clear about what I really wanted. And I wasn't brave enough to say what I wanted.
So speaking of that, which brings me to a funny memory, because being with you is like taking this beautiful walk down memory lane over the last few years, say, gosh, how did we get here? But if I remember right, when we first started online dating, we were talking about, okay, like Nancy says, she's tall and she's gorgeous and she's 6 feet tall. And I'm envious every day. I would love to be 6 feet tall, right? But it's like, okay, what do I do? And in the beginning, I remember you saying, you know what? This is my thing. Everybody's got a thing. And he has to be at least 6'1", Bella. And we would go through your inbox together and we're on Match. And I'm logged in as Nance. And Nance is logged in as Nance. And she's in LA. And I'm here in Chicago. And I was like, oh my God, look at this guy. And we were looking at men that had emailed her. She's like, no, he's 6 feet. Let's move on. I'm like, but look at this message. Look at, nope. He's done. And so now tell us what happened and how David Bruce made it through those filters, Nancy Holla.
You know, okay, that's funny. And you are 100% right. And all I can do to make myself feel okay about that is the ultimate outcome was great. But I probably passed away by a lot of great guys, because that's a silly thing. I mean, you know, listen, we all do have something, but
we all
and
do.
That was my thing, but it wasn't my thing. Like, it turns out it's not my thing at all. It turns out that was a childhood thing that I never really challenged or explored, because I always felt awkward being the tallest girl. I was 5'11 in fourth grade. I was taller than the football coach in fourth grade. And, you know, like, we all have some trauma stuff from childhood, and that was mine. You know, I felt like awkward about my physicality. And so I needed a guy to be like enormously tall so I could feel like, oh, bundled up in his arm.
A little. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is, I think of it now and I laugh, but that was real for me then. Well, so David on his Hinge app, he listed himself as 6 feet tall, which, you know, I will lovingly say he is not, but it's fine. And he's like, well, he thinks he is. And I'm like, I assure you, you're not, but that's okay, because I love you and it's fine. And guys always think they're taller than they are. Okay. And so he listed his height as 6 feet tall, but his pictures were, in my opinion, so charming because they were so low res and low, like funny, you know, and not, I mean, my pictures were the Bella Gandhi professional, you know, photo suite of one was this and, you know, different outfits and berry lip and fluffy hair. And, oh, I'm just leaning over this bar having a whiskey. What? Oh, you caught me. Hi.
You caught me in my gorgeous chambray shirt and my perfect jeans that are hugging my hips. Oh. Just when it was 105 degrees outside and did that photo shoot.
So hot. But his photos were, you know, not that. But he was funny. And he was like, here's what I liked. It was minimal. It wasn't like he was trying to explode on the page, like, oh my God, there's everything about me and I'm so funny and quippy and clever. And there was something about him, and I liked his expression, and I liked his smile, and I just liked him. Good vibe. And then Sherry came for a visit to Seattle, and we were sitting on my couch, and I had I think that I'd already been on one date with him. And she looked at his profile and she's like, oh my God, he's so hunky. And I'm like, is he? And you know, like when one of your girlfriends thinks that your guy is cute, you're like,
Let me lean into that.
And then I mentioned that he was a former professional hockey player. And, you know, Sherry's big into sports. She's, you know, a very proud alumni of University of Iowa, Go Hawks. And she loves all that Big Ten stuff. And she loves all the sports stuff. And I'm not that way, you know, just because it's not my interest. But so she's like, oh my God, he is this hunky Canadian former professional hockey player. And so, and I'm like, oh my God, he is so cute. Right?
Right? Right? Look at him.
But I'll tell you something. Our first date, our very first date, we were sitting at the bar having a drink, and I didn't know how tall he was because he was seated, and I sidled in right away, so he didn't get a chance to stand up, so I didn't know. And you know, I'm like, oh brother, I hope he's, you know, like, I hope this works out, as I'm drinking my Chardonnay, nursing my Chardonnay. Then I find out, because we're saying where do you live? Where do you live? I was new to Seattle, so I thought Bellingham was a neighborhood in Seattle. Seattle has a lot of neighborhoods like Queen Anne, Fremont, you know, they all have names. So I said, well, how long did it take you to get here? You know, 2 hours. two hours.
Hours?
2 hour drive one way. And so then I thought, oh my God, here it is, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. This guy is going to, he's going to drive 4 hours round trip. I should at least say. So I broke my rule, because my dating rule was one drink and then go and then see if there's a second date. But so I said, would you like to have something to eat? And he said, I would love to take you to dinner. So I said, okay, listen, there's a really cute French bistro right around the corner. Let's go there. So we got up and I noticed that he was shorter than I was. And I was like, okay, all right, Nancy, just chill out. So far, this guy is nice. And you just said to yourself, you need to look for a different kind of man. You just said those words 2 hours ago on your couch in tears. So just chill out and have the date. So we go to the French bistro, we're sitting across from each other, and we proceed to have this lovely, you know, as romantic as a dinner can be with two people who just met, but there was definitely a connection. There was nothing, you know, sexual or anything. It was just sweet and lovely and cute and funny. And then we're walking to the car, because he drove us there around the corner. So he was driving me back to my car, and I noticed again, oh my, he is shorter than I am. And I thought, well, you have a decision to make. Like, here's a really nice guy who clearly wants to see you again. What are you going to do, Nancy? What are you going to do? Are you going to really not date somebody because of 2 inches of height? And so I just decided to ignore it. And now it's so hilarious to me that I would ever have thought that way. Like, that I would pass up this kind of love for something so superficial. And my friends in Chicago, Betsy and Scott, and Scott's a little bit shorter than Betsy. And they've been married forever, happily married for like 25, 30 years. And Betsy's like, oh, girl, like, look at Scott. Look at Scott.
And I met them.
I love Scott. Like, look at him. Like, do you think that I would pass this up for, you know, for 2 inches of height? And I thought to myself, you're absolutely right. So it's good. You know, we all have a hang up, probably not we all, but many people do have a thing.
We all do. As a dating coach, I can say what you're saying is correct. We all have a hang up.
We all have a hang up. But you know what I would say? I would invite everyone to explore it. You know, some things are deal breakers, you know, like maybe you don't want to date somebody who smokes cigarettes. Like, okay, some things might be deal breakers, but look, explore it. And really ask yourself why, and ask yourself where it comes from. And for me, it comes from some fourth grade playground insult. You know what I mean? That stuck with me like a cloud. And shake it off, man. Because I think a lot of hangups are about the unresolved stuff from childhood, or unresolved stuff from former relationships. And if you explore it and really look honestly at it, and maybe look beyond it. That's all I'm going to say. Not everybody can do it, but if you can, I think you'll be surprised, because guess what happens? Your dating pool opens up. I mean, guess what? If I'm going to say, okay, well, I'm only dating guys who are 6'3", who are in their late 50s, who are this, that, you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden your dating pool shrinks tremendously.
Tremendously. Tremendously. And I think a conversation you and I had, because I love numbers and stats, is that only 12% of the US male population is over 6 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
You didn't tell me that.
And so, and I'm sure I didn't levy that on you right away, because that would usually make most people cry, especially when they're heightists and they're like, he must be over 6 feet tall. And I'm thinking, okay, if you put 100 guys in a room, even 100 age appropriate men, so let's say at that time, 50 to 60 years old. Right, and if I said, okay, they're now, I need everybody over that's under 6 feet tall to leave the room. That would mean, close your eyes and imagine, 88 of those guys would depart the room and we would be left with 12 guys just based on one parameter, and that's height. And then when you lump in, well, I'd really like him to at least have a bachelor's degree or a master's degree, because I have a master's degree.
Right.
17% of Americans have a master's degree. 34% have an undergraduate degree. So it's like how we slice and dice. And I'm not saying this to demotivate people, but it's really to, like Nancy's saying, think about for real, 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 what your deal breakers or your deal makers are, and then think about that, because with every inch that you open up your parameters on height, with every year that you open up with age on both ends, older, younger, with every mile in your zip code that you widen, you may just let in the love of your life and you don't know. And Nancy's is not the only story where, oh my gosh, he wasn't in my parameters, or he said he was 6 feet, but maybe he was 6 feet tall on a really big hair day, whatever that was, right? But it's like, I've had clients that have told me my age limit was set to 60, right? And then one day I went to 61 and I got that first last message in my inbox. Yeah. And that was the love of her life, right? And so really thinking about those things, right? How important, and you can probably answer this question now better than anybody. I ask it rhetorically. How important is blank to long-term happiness? How important is height to long-term happiness? It's like, okay, how, right? And what I love, and this is a part of the story, Nance, I didn't know. And I saw you at your wedding. I didn't know David was shorter than you. I thought you were the same height. And so she's laughing if you could see this video right now. And I thought, and I've told this story since I've been at the wedding, and they're the same height. And now she's telling me, and you're hearing it first, that he's actually a little bit shorter, and she's okay with it. And this is the most soulful, easy, elevator, yummy love that she's ever had in her life. And isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Well, I love what you just said about, you look at all your parameters, and if you can open each one up a little bit, it's like opening up the floodgates, right? Like, so if you're saying I'll only date somebody within 20 miles, well, of where I live right now, well, guess what? Bellingham is 90 miles from Seattle. I didn't have that as a parameter set. I think unthinkingly, I just didn't have it. If I had, I mean, God, and now I live here. I was like, okay, I'm a girl who's lived in Chicago, LA, Seattle. I thought I was a big city person forever. I live in a little village, it's adorable. I love it. But I mean, what I love about it is that I am living here with David. I would live anywhere. I said in my wedding vows,
you did.
I would live anywhere to be with you. And that is the absolute truth. And he feels the same way. If I said, okay, I want to move back to Chicago, he would be on it in a heartbeat. It doesn't matter as long as we're together. But things like, height, or, do you know what deal breakers should be? Deal breakers should be unkindness.
Yes.
Cruelty, intolerance, right? Withholding affection. Like, those are deal breakers. Deal breakers aren't height or degrees or, bank accounts. I mean, you can't. Yeah. In the quest for true love, you just have to do a little bit more magical thinking, I think. A little bit more, yummy, like bring me the yummy, and whatever package that person comes in, I'm going to be open up enough to explore that, that good feeling.
And this story just came to my mind from your wedding and to what Nancy says. These are the deal breakers you should have. People that are inconsistent, unreliable, right, don't care about you or your life. Nancy's son, Alex, who's this hunky, lovely, military, well-spoken, all that is good. First time I laid my eyes on the kid, and I'd heard he was amazing. And then he got up and gave a speech at his mom's wedding that brought everybody to tears and to their knees. And he tells this story about, I'm this big military guy and I was out, and I'm probably telling the story incorrectly, so tell me. And Alex was out somewhere and he had been skiing or snowshoeing, and he gets back and he realizes that he lost his car keys and it could be anywhere in this vastly snowy terrain that he was in. So he's like every good military soldier, I did what any of them would do. I called my mom.
Yeah, exactly.
I called my mom.
As a 28-year-old naval officer, I called my mom. That was so funny.
I died laughing. And the story and what he did was talk about this amazing man that his mom was with. And David jumps in the car, brings an extra set of keys.
Drives 5 hours in a snowstorm.
5 hours in a snowstorm.
One way. Because Alex was in Whistler, which is in Canada. So he had to go across the border. He had to first go to Anacortes to get Alex's spare keys, which is an hour drive. And then he had to drive up Whistler Mountain in a terrible snowstorm. Here's the thing. I'm telling it like that. He wouldn't tell it like that. He thinks it's funny. He didn't even blink an eye. He's like, and I said, I'll do it. And he goes, no, you're not doing it. I'm going to do it. Because I was getting over a cold. He goes, you're staying here. Stay in the couch. I'm going to do it. Drives up to Whistler Mountain, meets Alex at a place, hands him the keys, and Alex, and then stays overnight at his sister's house, and then drives back. And Alex texts me. He goes, "That guy is a chief. He's a good guy." And I said, "I know." And we were just dating. He hadn't even met Alex yet.
I have goosebumps.
For your kids, right?
Who would do that?
You know, I've been a single mother for most of my kids' lives, right? Divorced when they were 4 and 7. And nobody ever lived with us. I was a single mom. I dated, yes, but, you know, kept that sort of out of the radar of the kids until I was waiting to meet someone special. And I never did when they were younger. So, you know, as a single mother who's sort of shouldered it all on her own, right, for so many years, to have somebody step in and immediately take some of the weight, right? Like take some of the responsibility because out of love for me, he didn't even know Alex yet. Now he and Alex are super close. He and my daughter, Olivia, are very close. There's so much love and there's so much, you know, back and forth just between them. But in the early days, he didn't know the kids, but he was there. Like I can't even articulate what that was like for me and how, totally life-changing that was. Oh my God, I'm going to cry because it felt like it was a long time, just me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I had a partner and we weren't even engaged yet. You know, he was just my boyfriend. And all of a sudden I have a partner who's going to drive up a mountain to help my kid.
I mean,
oh my God, I get emotional with that story. Alex tells the story in such a funny way and such a sweet endearing way. But for me, it was, you know, It was a pretty big moment.
It's the real deal. And so much so that your wedding was in September and we're now in February by the time you're listening to this. And the story just, it's like, I'm looking at Nancy and having this conversation and the neurons started firing. We didn't plan to tell the story, but this is the story of this is, you know, I always say we focus so much on these quantitative things, right? Like, what does he do? How much money does he make? Does he make more than me? What does he look like? How tall is he? What's his education? And yet you can see here that there's something you can't teach character.
Yeah.
Right. True. And here's this man that hasn't even met your kids and was like, I'm going to drive 5 hours and I'm going to bring him this key because that's who I am. You didn't have to say, hey, could you go? He's like, you lay in bed and heal. I've got this. And he didn't even think probably for 2 seconds about it because that is who he is. And this is what a true partnership feels like. And if you're listening to this and you think, oh my gosh, I can't even believe it. This sounds like a fairy tale. This is what exists. And this is what can exist for you when you start to prioritize different things in your relationships and you don't ignore the red flags and you look for the green flags and you look for somebody who loves you for you and will love all of the pieces of your life because they are yours. David didn't know Alex. David probably had seen a photo of Alex and jumps in the car and says, Alex is your son and therefore he's important to me. So I'm going to go bail him out of this, right? And that is like, oh my God, that is the kind of love, like the story that I told you earlier, I imagine someone who's going to be like, look who I got, elbowing the guy in the tuxedo, and she's up on the stage wearing sequins. And then this is what that person can do and will do for you. And you don't even have to ask that person.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it is. It is. There is a fairy tale quality to it. I mean, honestly, that's one of the reasons I decided to wear a big poofy wedding dress on my wedding. I was going to wear, you know, like a svelte little red carpet sequins number. But the closer we got to the wedding day, I was just so filled up with this like, wow, you know, this is really happening. I'm really getting married, you know, at my lifelong friend's home in Cleveland Heights, beautiful backyard wedding, 50 of the most important people in the world to me. And this guy who is like, it is so easy to love him, and it's so easy for him to love me. It feels so effortless. I didn't know it could be like that. So I decided to lean fully into bride mode. I got a big old poofy cupcake of a dress, and I had the most fun. I felt like a princess. I did. And I still feel that way. I mean, honestly, I look back at the wedding and think there was a reason it was so fun and playful and joyful and dance filled, you know, and everybody hooting and hollering, because it was just, there was so much joy, you know, and everybody was so I could feel everyone's happiness for us. I could feel it. You know, it's no small thing to find true love in the middle of your life, in your mid 50s. I think that's a big deal, honestly.
It's a huge deal.
I do. I think that, you know, you get to a certain point, you've been single for a long time, and you're almost conditioned to think it's not going to happen to me. I know for sure that's what I felt. And so to find true love at that stage in life feels like we got to celebrate this. We got to celebrate this, man. So that's what the wedding felt like to me.
And marriage at this point, how does it feel?
Oh my God. Well, marriage feels like, I'll tell you I'll tell you something. It feels like the safest place I've ever been in my life.
Oh,
so it's like, I feel like I've never been safer in my life, not as a child, not as a young adult. I've never been safer. I feel zero anxiety about anything. Really, I can honestly say that. I don't feel anxious. I don't feel worried. You know, I'm always going to be a little bit concerned for the kids, you know, make sure everybody's safe, drive safely and this and that, but I'm not anxious, and I'm not, you know, wondering when the other shoe is going to drop, that feeling of, I don't know what the future holds. Cause I do know what the future holds. It holds this beautiful happiness and this loving partnership and this marriage. And I'll tell you that, this year in my business, I decided to take my business into new directions. I decided to offer more things online, a brand therapy lab, a podcast lab, online courses. In addition to the one-on-one work I do, I invested money into my business. I built a new website. I started new things. And here's why, because I felt so grounded and secure. Like, I just feel like there's nothing we can't do together, he and I. You know, and now he's my business manager. He takes care of invoicing. We can talk about business together. And I just don't feel like I'm going it alone on every single front. I feel so safe and loved. You know, I'm like held, like I feel held. I mean, and even if there's a spat, like I was mad at him this morning because I thought he was being grumpy about something. And I'm not being grumpy. I'm trying to be quiet because you're still sleeping. He gets up really early. And he makes me coffee every morning, and he puts it in a metal carafe, and he puts it on my bedside table an empty cup. So that the minute I wake up, it's a thermal carafe. No, so if he makes it at 6 o'clock and I wake up at 8, it's still piping hot and super fresh. And I'm like, you know, we were talking for a minute. I'm like, I think you were grumpy. And then, you know, he's like, I'm sorry if I seem grumpy, honey. I was just trying to be quiet. And then I thought to myself, erase that. And I said, you know, baby, forget it. You're not grumpy. Thank you for the coffee. I'll see you today at 5. And I love you very much. Like, those small things are just, it's so easy to brush away because the bigger picture is so solid. That's the thing. I think like when you're in a contentious relationship, all the little stuff, all that shit just gets like, overwhelming, because you're mad about a lot of things. You're mad about big things. You're mad that you don't feel seen and heard and appreciated. So the small things, like you were making noise this morning when I was trying to sleep, that seems big. That seems indicative of, you don't care about my feelings.
Right.
You know,
yes.
Take on these big monstrous meaning, like, oh, well, the way you spoke to me means you don't respect me, you know, and it's not like nothing can be small. And guess what? When you're living with somebody for year after year after year, you're going to say the wrong thing. Sometimes you're going to do the wrong thing. You're going to get in each other's nerves. But when you're truly safe and grounded, you can brush that nonsense aside, right? You can brush it aside because you know that there is so much love, that there is so much affection, that there's so much true loyalty, that you don't have to worry about the small stuff. That's just like human. The dust of human life. You can sweep it away. I think that is the greatest thing. That is my favorite thing, is that regardless, we're fine. We're great. Nice. We're more than fine. We're happy.
And I just full body goosebumps when you said, I've never felt safer in my entire life from childhood until now. And safety is so underrated, and feeling secure, right? And like you said, kindness when you're with the right person. I mean, Andy and I will be married 25 years this May, and we probably have little arguments. I don't know how many times a week. A lot, right? We're raising two teenagers together. Yeah. We've been together for basically our entire lives. We were like children when we got married, but it's okay. Conflict is okay with the right person. Yes. You navigate through the conflict, and because you're not worried, you don't see me as important as another paper cut that's ultimately going to, you know, hit as deep as that stab wound. It's like, no, I know that you're good and I'm good and we're good. So this is just like a little breeze of wind. Okay. And let's move on. And then being able to navigate conflict, even when it could be more serious conflict, which is fine. If you put any two human beings together for a long enough amount of time, there will be conflict, or somebody is giving in, but it's about how you agree to navigate through that conflict, right? You put boundaries around what you can say and what you can't say. And one of our rules is, when you have conflict, can this conflict get our relationship to a better place? And if so, then it was totally worth it. You look at it as a stair step up. Like, yes, we're going to have friction. That's part of being human and part of being in a partnership. But can we make us better and take the next step forward?
I love that, Bella. That's really smart. That's really smart, because, and you know what? I love that for you too, as an extension even of your brand, because after you find true love, you want to keep true love, you know, you want to keep it, you want to sustain it. You don't want to throw it away. And, you know, I love the idea of having boundaries about, and having a goal of, you know, we're together. And I remember saying to him once, you know, the only thing that matters really is that you and I are good, because when we're good, everything's good.
Exactly.
And, you know, because there's nothing we can't handle, because we're a team. We love each other. We're two very, very capable adults who dig each other so much. And we love our kids. We love our friends and family. So as long as we're good, everything's good. When we fall apart, all that other stuff falls apart too. So it's like tending to that. And, but also it's easy, because it's great. You know, it's like, I really do love this guy so much, and he's really madly in love with me too. And I know it. So nothing that happens is a deal breaker now.
No,
Really. So it's good. But here's the thing. I have that foundation because of the work I did with you. Again, I come back to that shift in consciousness, that real awareness and awakening of what's important to me. And what kind of relationship do I ultimately not want? Not like, how tall is he and how cute is he? What is the relationship I want? What is the feeling I want every day? And that is the start of it when you're dating. So everybody who's listening, who's dating, think about yourself, you know, 5 years from now, married to one of these people. What do you want to feel like? Right? What do you want to feel like when you wake up? What do you want to feel like when you go to bed? How do you want to be able to talk to this person? How do you want to be able to be held by this person? And you're right when you say safety is so underrated. And I would have totally never said that in a million years. Because you're right. You know, you started by saying I'm adventurous. I am. I'm like a risk taker. I've been in business for myself for 30 years. And I always thought of myself as this free spirit and very adventurous. And I never thought to myself, I really want to feel safe.
Yeah.
But now that I feel safe, it is such a delicious feeling. It's like the basis for everything else I can do creatively, spiritually, professionally. Because now that I'm grounded in marriage safety, love safety, like the sky's the limit. So it's really cool. I mean, I sort of turned that on its head. It's a great thing.
Man. And to have that kind of love fuels all of this other beauty in your life. And like Nancy was saying, she's pivoted this business that she has. And you guys, if you see her website, it's beautiful. And I know so many women that I'm in touch with, that I coach, probably listening to this, either you have your own business, a small business, a mid-sized business, or you have this side hustle and you want to make this your purpose. You want to take this, but you don't know how to tell your story. I just have to tell you, I've worked with a lot of people, but if you want to check out Nancy's work, and you can tell just by listening to her on this podcast, how she can take the nuggets out and get to the heart of the story. She's really, truly brilliant. So I would encourage you, we'll have the website. Is it nancyhalla.com?
Yeah,
nancyhalla.com. H-A-L-A,
Halla.
Halla, and check out her website. And Nance, I just have to end with one quick story about you from our photo studio, which I know those of you who have followed me on Instagram, and if you don't, follow us at Smart Dating Academy, but you know about the berry lip. So when Nancy came into our photo studio, I came in there and I'm like, and she's like, listen, I know you wanted color in clothes, but I really wear a lot of black. And, you know, and I was like, okay, that's fine. These are all great clothes. We can make do with this. And she sits down in the makeup chair and the makeup artist is like, we're done. I'm like, you need to pop her lip. And Nancy said, what do you mean pop her lip? Like, this is the lip color that I wear. And I said, no, no. For our photos, we will pop your lip. You need to have a brighter lipstick on. And I said, we do what's called the berry lip. She's like, what is the berry lip? I said, look at my lipstick right now, right? I may not have a lot of eye makeup on or a lot of makeup on in general, but that lip is always popped because the science says that when men are viscerally attracted to lips that pop, red, brighter pink, berry. She's like, I don't know. I'm like, you're in our photo studio and I love you. And I say this with love, but we're going to do a berry lip on you. And that, and those photos and the berry lip then became something that you loved.
Oh my God, the berry lip. I mean, that's something we couldn't stop talking about on the podcast. And the berry, and I'll tell you what, those photos pop because the berry lip, because the smile is so front and center. And I was a nude lip girl forever. You know, and those bright lips became our signature. So then Sherry would do a bright red lip and I would do a bright berry lip. And we had, I mean, we were working with Beauty Counter, that makeup company, and they were, so we were talking about the berry lip. We sold the berry lip on our website. I'm a big believer in it, honestly. And I have so many berry lipsticks now. You are the queen of the lipsticks, though. Your lipstick does not move. Like, Bella can put lipstick on at 7 a.m. and do like 5 TV show appearances and run around town. And at 7 o'clock at night, she's got the same lipstick on and it looks amazing. I'm like, I don't know what magic shellac you're using, but it is unbelievable the way your lipstick stays. And it's so pretty. And you have such a nice smile. But see, you know what else the berry lip does? It gives you confidence because when you have a big, bright lip, you want to smile. You don't want to just sit there with a pout. You want to show a big smile, a joyous smile.
And 100.
That's a good vibe.
It is the great vibe. So put on your berry lip. If you're listening to this and you're dubious about it, I'm just going to challenge you. And every couple of months, we do a berry lip challenge on Instagram where we have people send their photos and how their berry lip made them feel. And I put you in my stories. So we may or may not be running it when you're listening to this episode, but I want you to put on a berry lip. Just find one. Hell, go to CVS, go to Walgreens. I'm not saying go to, you know, go to Neiman's and buy a $100 red lip that's going to end up in your cosmetic graveyard. That's not what I'm saying. Like, go buy one of those Maybelline $5 sticks. I mean, go to my Instagram live, you guys. I did a whole 45 minute 100 episode on the Berry Lip. And I put on like 8 different ones to show you guys from $3 to $100. Like, you can do this. And then we ran the challenge. So do the Berry Lip and it will just, it's like, you know, you're kind of like this French woman. It's like a little femme fatale. Like, you can be a little, your hair can be a little like mussed up. You can be wearing black, but you put that red lip on and suddenly you're like, I'm kind of badass.
I know. It is a badass feeling. It really is. And a berry lip with sunglasses is like a great look.
Oh, it's super hot.
Don't worry about eye makeup at all.
No.
And even like, you can throw your hair in a top knot. It doesn't matter. It looks very chic.
Messy bun, and sunglasses, berry lip. Done.
Very chic. Very. Yes. So,
Nance, if you had, I mean, you've been so incredibly generous with your time and I'm grateful. If you had
all day, you know that.
I know. I love you so much. If you could leave, you know, if you could leave people with, you know, just any gem of inspiration, of advice, like people that are thinking love isn't going to happen for me. Like, do you have anything that you can tell them, like, that can keep people fighting the good fight, walking the walk, running the marathon of love?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say number one, be brave enough and believe in yourself enough and believe in your own happiness enough to say what you want. And I think that the truth is, as humans, most of us want to find love. I think we're built that way.
Yeah.
I think it's part of our destiny. And I think that it's out there for all of us. It really is out there waiting for each one of us. And so it starts, though, with being brave. And saying it and not saying maybe or one day or maybe it's not for me, but making a declaration and saying, I will find true love. And then follow that heart, you know, follow that vision, follow that dream. And you have to tell yourself that story. If you're like me, you were telling yourself all kinds of other stories, self-defeating stories. So you have to look at your story. You have to look at your limitations that you've placed on yourself that you don't need. You got to be really brave. And you got to go for it. And I like you, I'm a total optimist about it now, Bella. And I know that that's one of the first things you said to me, that you're a total optimist, a psychotic optimist.
A psychotic optimist. Yay.
And I am too now. I really, really believe it. And I feel like getting out there and telling people about it. I mean, honestly, the women I meet, I just want to say, please call Bella. I want to be handing out your cards, because I really do believe that everybody can find some really great, great, great love story. But it starts with believing that you can.
Nance, I love you to pieces. And I can't wait to see you in person again. And thank you so much for sharing your story with me, with things I learned about Nancy, things I did not know during this call, even having been her dating coach for quite a while. So thank you so much. And you guys, feel free, if you love this episode, which I know you will, we have a page on our website dedicated to Nancy's love story. So come and check it out at smartdatingacademy.com. And if you love this episode, give us a review. I don't need a Christmas present. I don't need a birthday present. Just tell us how much you love this episode and come visit smartdatingacademy.com and check out nancyhalla.com. And with that, I bid you farewell until next time. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.